Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Wednesday, July 17th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Take one of our posts, share it with your friends. Get us out there. Today on the show, it's a sports potpourri night, guys. That's all you can tell. It is a sports potpourri night. There's a lot of stuff going on. I shouldn't even say that. There's stuff that's been gone because a lot of that stuff is now over. We're in the doldrums of the summer. We're going to start with the New York Knicks and Mr. Jalen Brunson. This is the start of Jalen Brunson becoming a New York Knicks star if he wasn't already. He signs a 4-year extension. He takes a $37 million discount. Takes an $11.4 million discount in 25-26, 12.3 in 26-27, 13.2 in 27-28. Takes $37 million under the max. Guys, talk to me about Jalen Brunson.
Kev, go ahead.
Okay. If this doesn't show the leader that Jalen Brunson is, if this is not showing that he should be every Knicks fan's favorite player, I don't know what does. I mean, he put, you know, the money he's getting is still life-changing, life-altering, generational money that his kids and grandkids do not have to worry about it, assuming he takes care of his finances, you know, always big if there. But my goodness, he'd put the team over him. He could have asked for the moon, or he could have played out his contract this year with the new media rights that the NBA is getting. The salary cap could be ballooning next year. I mean, $37 million he's taken off the table. It could be a lot more than that based on what the cap's going up to next year and years after that. So,
agreed. Right now, it's $37 million under. Correct, yes. Yeah.
So, you know, in 2 years, you know, once the cap goes up a lot more and once they get these other contracts settled, you're going to have to, you know, figure out what you're doing with Randall. You'll have Bridges in 2 years, maybe a couple of other guys. At that point, you can reassess and you can always go back to Jalen and say, all right, let's restructure. Let's make you a little bit better, you know, based on that. But for today and for the next couple of years, he has done everything he could to make sure the Knicks field a championship caliber team. Or at least a competitor, you know, championship level, you know, competitor type team. You know, they're going to be there. They're going to fight for the championship. The only thing they really need is to figure out their backup five. But, you know, my goodness, you can't say more about Brunson.
Yep.
And the thing I like is he's betting on himself because he knows in 4 years he's going to be up for that next max. And he'll probably take the next max because that'll be the last major max he gets. But in order to get that, he's got to play. I mean, the fact is, though, he's beloved in New York to the point where you can't imagine them not maxing him out, even if he does not, even if he's a little shade below where he is 4 years from now. I can't imagine him not getting the max money. I was just blown away by this move. It was so funny. I mean, we put it up on social, but it was a strange week. There was so many celebrities passed, and obviously we had the stuff that went on in Butler and all the other stuff. And it was like it almost got forgotten about that he did this on Friday. And then, you know, you're sitting there on Saturday with everything else that went on. And then you realize, my God, this guy just went out of his way to say, please re-sign Randall. Please save some money here for a veteran that's going to help our team, a veteran five, like Kevin pointed out. And, you know, listen, these are the Villanova kids. Say what you want, like him, don't like him, whatever. They all are under that same cloth. They all play the same way. They all act the same way. They're the most selfless group of guys you've ever seen. And now you know how a team that the sum of the parts were better than the individual players won championships. It's because these guys played selfless, and you know, and Jalen shows it, you know, every night. And when you're looking at the Knicks, and just to go on a slight aside, if you're watching any of the summer league, which I'm not watching a ton of it, but I'm following a little bit, Kolek, who reminds me a lot of Brunson, only taller, who plays a similar style of getting everybody involved, able to finish at the rim, good passer, all that stuff, is a guy that I think is fighting for minutes this year. I think he's got a real shot to get minutes this year on this team because he plays the same unselfish style that the rest of these Knick players play. And, you know, it's fun to see this team right now. Definitely yeah. something I'm looking forward to watching. Jake?
Yep.
Okay. I have one other NBA note, and that is Kyrie Irving undergoes he undergoes surgery for a broken hand this week. Don't know how much that hindered him in the finals. I guess that's to be decided at some point, but that was my only other NBA note. You guys have any NBA notes before we move on?
Just on Kyrie, he ran into a buzzsaw. I don't know even if he was playing like completely unbelievable that they beat the Celtics. Celtics were just getting too much from too many players. Kev?
Yeah, a little summer league action. I mean, you know, with all the high draft picks and everything else, everything is all around Bronny James, who was shooting, what, about 20%, I think, in the summer league so far? Just proving what we've said all along. This kid, unfortunately, is not ready for the NBA. I really hope the Lakers do the right thing. Let him go down to the G League this year. Don't force feed this kid. Let him develop in the G League and see if he can develop a game. And, you know, maybe in a year or two, he'll be ready to contribute in the NBA.
Yeah, the sad part is he's LeBron's son. So, you know, it becomes where people will automatically either root for him or against him immediately. And it's a polarizing problem for this poor kid who, you know, can never live up to his father's. There's a handful of people in the history of the sport that lived up to his father. So he's not going to be one of them, just like Jordan's kids couldn't do it and all the other greats, you know, after them. So, you know, they should just let him develop and be his own player and not have to play with his father. If he makes the team, it's simply because it was forced. I mean, there would be no way there's no way he would make this team. They would have to force it on there.
Okay.
And of course, you go to the other end of the draft, you know, the number two pick, Alex Saar, the other night, 0-15. You know, like I said, you know, when he was coming out, the kid, I mean, you see the wingspan, you see a few of the clips, you know, the guy can play defense. He's got the wingspan, he's got the smarts to play defense. He needs to develop an offensive game. That was a knock about him coming out of college.
For the first two picks, both for the first two picks were unable to develop their own shot, only they couldn't create for themselves. And that's the thing with the NBA draft. That's why it's not as much fun to follow anymore, because they're not really drafting people based on what they've done. They're drafting people based on what they think they can do. And it's, you know, so merit doesn't mean much. Now it's about length and size and wingspan and all these other catchphrases that are so important. Able to leap over this, stand still, or whatever the hell, all the crap.
I mean, this guy not room for the Lakers. I'm more upset about them drafting their first round pick.
Yeah, you like Dalton Connect.
Exactly. And I want to root for Dalton Connect. And then you see him go to the Lakers, and you go, damn.
Yeah, that's what happens. It's like when somebody gets drafted by the Red Sox. I can't handle it.
Yep.
All right, we'll move over to soccer. So we had two finals come to the end on Sunday, the Euro 24 and Copa America. Euro 24, Spain wound up beating England 2-1. Spain scored in the 47th minute. England in the 73rd, and then Spain again in the 86th minute to break the tie. Spain wins their fourth Euro title. England becomes the first one to lose consecutive finals. England had four shots on goal on 9 attempts. Spain only had 6 on 16, but Spain can gain the 35 to England. Darren, comments on the Euro 24 going to Spain.
Well, Spain kind of controlled this match. England had spurts, though, where they looked like they were doing well. But for the most part, it looked like Spain just a little bit outclassed them in a lot of ways. But then out of nowhere, the 73rd minute, Palmer puts that goal in, and you're like, wow, 1-1. And then in the 86th minute, Olazabal, I believe, put the game winner in. You know, again, all the goals were pretty. The goaltenders, I thought, for the most part, the goalies played great, I thought. Not a lot of shots on goal, but there were chances. Spain had a lot of chances. They just weren't getting them on goal. You know, listen, Spain is so talented. Kevin said it early in the tournament. Spain just looks so much more talented than everybody else, and they were. I mean, they were able to control the ball against basically everybody they played. They never seemed like they were threatening most of their matches. You know, they had 1-0 wins and ties that went to kicks and stuff like that. But for outside of the Germany game, which was going up against the home team on their in their soil and coming back and winning that one, I didn't think Spain was really threatening any other match that they played in this entire tournament. Best team won. Afterwards, Southgate announces this week he steps down as the England coach. He immediately becomes a target for the U.S. team. We'll see what happens with that. You'd love to see Gareth Southgate come here. I mean, you want someone that's a winner. You want someone that's going to be relevant. And, you know, again, a great tournament for England. It's so funny because when you are watching soccer here younger and you only hear about the English Premier League as the Premier League in the world, and you're like, how come England doesn't win anything? Because a lot of the players come from all over the place. I mean, the La Liga is very good too, as is Serie A. You know, the French league is great, Ligue 1, whatever. So, I mean, they're all really good. But England always seems to come up just a little bit short. Kev, thoughts?
I think it summed it up pretty well. I mean, last Wednesday when we talked on the show about the final, we all three of us thought Spain was going to win. We all had Spain winning fairly easily as well. And you know, the score was 2-1, but, you know, like I said, except for some stretches for England, you know, Spain really controlled this game. That Spain probably could have and should have won a little bit bigger. A lot more chances, just didn't put enough on net. But the right team won.
Yep. And
simple.
Exactly.
And over here in the Americas, we crowned the Copa America champion. Argentina beats Colombia 0-0. They scored the goal in extra time. Excuse me. They wind up winning 1-0. It's a goal in the 111th minute by Martinez. He goes high. Goalie goes low. Puts it right past him. Back-to-back Copa America titles for Argentina, plus a World Cup in between. So they're on a hell of a roll with three titles that quick. Messi came out in the 66th minute. And to start that game, we had an 82-minute delay because of fan issues, is how I will classify that. Darren, Copa America?
Well, a couple things. First, to start with the third-place game, Canada had the game kind of won, but they kept pressing, and they allowed Uruguay to come back and tie with a counter. It just would have been important for Canada, I think, to get the third place. I'm not saying that it means anything compared to what Argentina did. Don't get me wrong. But it reminded me of John Wooden. I mean, I remember when they lost the game to Notre Dame. Everybody talks about the 88 game, you know, winning streak. UCLA had an 11-point lead by like 3 minutes to go, but they kept just pushing forward, turned it over a few times, and that's how they lost. It was kind of like what Canada did. They were trying to press for that second goal, ended up giving it the tie-breaking goal, and then lost on kicks. But enough about that. Argentina, Colombia, I could easily say watching this match, and I can honestly say I didn't stay up for the entire end because I was too tired. Because it's supposed to start at 8 Eastern time, started about 9:30, like Gino said. Colombia controlled the play. Colombia was actually the better team on the field. Colombia did a lot of things well. They even hit a post early. A lot of things that could have gone their way. They controlled possession. They looked like the faster team to the ball. Messi looked like, well, he got banged up early. But even before that, the announcers were even talking about how they're playing like 11 on 10 on defense because Messi's not doing anything to try to help. And he's old, and he's still amazing when he has the ball in his feet. But for the most part, I mean, I think this is the end of the line watching him kind of limp off the field the other day. I just think that the greatest player in the history of the sport, or at least in the argument of top five, we'll probably not make another World Cup, in my opinion. Again, I thought Colombia played really, really well. To touch on your earlier part, the game being delayed. So a lot of fans tried to get onto the get into the stadium in Miami without tickets. In the end, they basically decided to let them in, which sets a real nice precedent for the World Cup in 26. They better do something about security because this stuff can't happen. You can't have endangering the fans that have bought tickets, and you can't have it endangering the players. It's out of hand. Kev?
Yeah, I've read a thing about, you know, other, you know, World Cups or major tournaments or things like that. There's actually like two separate perimeters set up where even before you get to the stadium, you've got to show tickets and, you know, make sure you get through that first perimeter first. And then you get into the gates to show more tickets again with ID to get into the actual stadium. So, you know, they're going to adopt and do something with that for the World Cup in 26.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just embarrassing that the United States is ill-equipped to do crowd control of a major sporting event.
Between the what happened before the game there and what happened in the Colombia, who did they play there last week?
Uruguay.
And the fights in the stands and not having enough security that the Uruguayans felt they had to go into the stands to defend their families, their wives, their kids, and fight with the Colombian fans. I mean, there's U.S., Canada, and Mexico, the three of them are sharing hosting duties. All three guys to make sure that they do what's necessary to keep everybody safe.
Yep. Yeah, just unacceptable. And what ends up happening is anarchy reigns supreme because they allow these people into the arena without the tickets. Yep. So what are we really doing? I don't know. Just disappointed in the way that was done. Again, you know, living on the East Coast, it sucks because I can't stay up for the 120 minute and all that type of stuff. I got to work the next day. You know, it just doesn't work that way, you know, on a Sunday. But nonetheless,
I was tired. I did manage to last.
I did not. Well, you work from home. I don't want to hear it.
That helps a lot too. Yep.
Doesn't suck.
Like I said, you know, especially the first half of the game itself, Colombia dominated the first half. I mean, Takemi Martinez had four saves, and like you said, Darren, they also hit the post. I mean, for the game, the shot attempts, Colombia 19, Argentina 11. Even though on goal, only four on goal for Colombia, all in the first half, Argentina wound up with six on goal, finally got one in. The fouls, although this was a little lopsided, Colombia 18 fouls, Argentina 8. And I thought both teams were pretty aggressive. I thought the referee let a lot go.
I thought he did a good job, actually.
He set the tone of making sure that, you know, the players are going to decide it. Anything egregious will pull out the yellow card. There are only two on each side. You know, he left things go. He didn't take, you know, what from any of the players. You know, try to keep control that way of, you know, stop it. But at the same time, letting the players decide it, not falling for the flopping and the diving and all that sort of stuff. Nope, play on. Let's go. Like I said, first half is Emi Martinez holding them scoreless. And then, you know, the depth of Argentina, Lautaro Martinez, who led the tournament in goals with five. He was a sub in the 96th minute.
Yeah, he didn't start one game, I don't think.
I think he may have started one of the knockout rounds.
Maybe he did. I didn't remember that, but he might.
I mean, not in the knockout. I mean, the group stage. But, you know, for the most part, this is a guy that's a sub, and he led Copa America tournament in scoring.
Yeah. An embarrassment of riches for Argentina. Yes.
Yep. And like you said, Messi got injured before the half, did come out to start the second half, and then the 66th minute, he rolled the ankle. It looked like it was almost non-contact, and you saw that. You saw the second half, you know, that ankle was ballooned up pretty badly. So legitimate injury, no doubt about it. Hopefully he heals up. You know, I hope he can still play. You know, with the national team stuff, I think, going to be decreased here. I still want to see him play a little bit for Miami for the next year or two because he's still better than most of the MLS players.
And he's a huge draw, Kev.
Yeah, and he's still better than most of the world.
No matter where he goes, he's a huge draw. I mean, you know.
And if he wants to play another World Cup, if his ego allows it, he'd be a nice sub. If his ego allows it.
Yeah, the only reason why I said what I said about him probably not playing is because of the embarrassment of riches. I mean, you really can't bury some of these kids. These kids have to play. they're a little bit more threatening than Messi is at this point in the career. Nothing against Messi. Messi's amazing. I never saw Pelé play, really. So, you know, Jorge Canalia when I was a kid, you know, had certain guys. I mean, Messi and Ronaldo are the two best that I know. I mean, there might be others, but those would be the two guys I'd put at the top.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I agree. All right. Let's move over to tennis. So Wimbledon crowned some champions this past weekend. Kev, want to start us off?
Yeah, women's side, the semis. I realized that last week I butchered her name, which is not surprising knowing my pronunciation skills. Listening to the broadcasters, I think it's pronounced Krajicova. I think it's more of the closer name pronunciation. She beat Rybakina, came from one set down to win in three sets in the semis. Paolini defeated Vekic, also in three sets, lost the first, won the next two. And then in the final, they split the first two sets. Each one went 6-2. And then Krajicova took the third set. You know, she was up 5-4 serve and looked like she had some nerves trying to close out the set, but she did. She got the win. Didn't realize she actually won the French Open back in 2021.
Yep. Yes, she did.
Reached the world number two rankings in February of 2022. And it's fallen off a bit since, you know, obviously down to the 31st seed in this Wimbledon. But big run for her. I guess her mentor was Jana Novotná, who I think we remember a little bit growing up, you know, in the 90s. So good win for her. The men's side, the main events here. Semis, Djokovic defeated Musetti in straight sets. Alcaraz over Medvedev. Lost the first set 6-7 tiebreak, but then won 6-3, 6-4, 6-4 to set up the finals that I think everybody was looking forward to. And I thought, shockingly, Alcaraz beat Djokovic 6-2, 6-2, and 7-6, 7-4 in the tiebreak. After last year when they met in the finals, it was a five-set thriller. Played for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. And this one, Alcaraz just won very easily. Fourth major, he's a repeat Wimbledon champion. And one interesting stat, he won the French Open and he won the Wimbledon this year, joining the very exclusive list of people who've won it in the same year. Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Bjorn Borg, and Rod Laver.
That's it? Wow.
Pretty good company to keep. Company. And he's only 21 years old.
Yeah, that's pretty good company.
So he's got fourth major among active players. It's actually third on the list of active players with most majors. This Nadal's still active, and of course, Joker. Joker, this was his 10th Wimbledon final. He's made 10 Australian Open finals. He's made 10 US Open finals, only 7 at the French. No other man has made 10 or more at more than one tournament. Wow. And he's done it in 3 of the 4 Grand Slams. And the only one was the French, which I'm sure he's lost to Nadal probably several times in the semis.
That's the thing. Nadal has dominated it so often, there's no way to do it. Yeah. So this was the highest rated Wimbledon since 2019. The men had 2.2 million people watching the final. The women, 1.4, so not bad. The, like you said, 2 hours and 27 minutes in the straight set victory. You know, last year it was, 4 hours and change in the five setter. So it was pretty short work. And, Joker got what we thought he needed to have a chance. He got a straight set victory over Musetti. Went into Alcaraz, who scored at 84% of the first serve points won. I mean, that's just incredible. You know, it's like if your first serve, you're going to get win points 84% of the time. That's just a stat that he couldn't overcome. He broke him once, and Alcaraz broke Joker five times. So congrats to Alcaraz again, 21 years old. We'll wait and see. Who's the guy that's going to rise to try to compete with him? These three guys have had each other for the last 20 years. Now it's going to be, who's that other guy? Is it Sinner? Or is it going to be, who's the number one coming in? The only reason why I mentioned him. Or is there somebody else? The American showed a little heart this year, got a couple of guys into the quarters. Now we got to see if they can make the next move at the U.S. Open and try to get somebody into that final. That's U.S. tennis needs that. Even though the ratings were good, the women didn't do what they wanted. Coco gets knocked out. That hurts the women's side for Americans. And the men, even though we don't really know that well, you know, they had a couple of guys get to the, you had Fritz and you had Paul get to the quarters. They just need someone to break through.
So they had some good ratings. No thanks to Gino.
I didn't watch much of it either. It loses a little interest sometimes, you know, when with the time difference, unless there's a play you really want to watch. That's kind of what happens. The U.S. Open, I'm always much more glued to because it fits my time zone. I'm able to put it on at night. Yep. It's easy. It's cool. The funniest part is the one match I never watch is the final because it's always on a football Sunday, the first week of the season. It's always an awkward thing. So you might have it on in a second, flip back and forth to get scores, but you're not glued to it because it's week one NFL. If the Mets and the Yankees are in the race, you're getting scores on that too. It's a wild weekend. But anyway.
Yep.
That's my cross to bear.
We're going to move over to golf. Robert McIntyre won the Scottish Open with a minus 18 last week. Adam Scott finished second at minus 17. Any notes on the Scottish Open before we move to this week's? So the major in golf is coming up.
McIlroy, by the way, again, top five finish in the Scottish. He's been consistently close. He just hasn't been able to win. Let's see what happens going forward in these in the majors. I mean, I know that the Scottish is in the major, but it's a real good tune-up for Royal Troon this week. Sorry, Gene.
You know what? Here's the only problem, Darren. We're gonna talk about the British Open, now called the Open. Right now, we're gonna get into
championship. Come on, get it right.
Rory McIlroy is the second favorite on the board. He has as many titles in the last 5 years as I do. I don't know why he's ranked two. I know he keeps finishing high, but he's not winning anything. So,
well, he just said he finishes high every time. He gives himself a chance, falls apart Sunday, but people know Rory McIlroy.
Completely overrate him. At some point, these numbers have to drop. Come on. It's getting out of control now. British Open starts this Thursday at Royal Troon. Kev, any comments on the Open?
Well, obviously the tournament favorite is Scottie Scheffler. Plus 500 or 550, depending on the sports book you're looking at. He will be the favorite to win every major this year in the calendar year. The first guy to do it since Tiger Woods back in 2013. Tiger did it 12 times in his career that he was the outright favorite to win the major.
Wow.
I mean, 12 years at every major he was.
Right. That's pretty favorite. Awesome.
Yep. But again, it's the British Open. It's the link style. It's, you don't need to be the big hitter. You need to be finding fairways, getting the right bounces, learn how to work the ball. You can keep it low on some of these links courses and get the ball to run a little bit. And, we've seen it in years past. I mean, this is one major that you feel like is so wide open. I mean, when guys like Shane Lowry, when guys like, Stratton, Stenson, Cam Smith, go back 20 years, Todd Hamilton, John Daly got one, Justin Leonard, Brian Harman last year. You never know who's going to actually pull this off. So it is really wide open. Darren, any of your thoughts?
Yeah, a couple of things. First, I want to touch – I think I can speak for all three of us. We're hoping Tiger's playing on the weekend. That would be really cool. The Tiger-Monty thing this week was a little interesting, where Colin Montgomery said that Tiger should kind of just like step away, step aside. And Tiger retorted with the, well, I have an exemption and Colin doesn't.
Yeah.
Basically just talking about how many times Montgomery came up short in big spots. He got abused a little bit, but because the shark always, Norman always blew up in flames in the majors, he got a little bit of a break next to Norman. People bring up Norman more than they bring up Monty for the guy that blew the tournaments. But Monty certainly was there.
We look back on Monty's career, never won a major. Order of Merit on the European Tour, I think 8 or 9 times.
Oh, great player.
That's the best player. Ryder Cup, you never wanted to face him as an American. He was unbeatable in singles.
Who made him? Who made him put out that 1 foot putt? Somebody made him put it out. He got all pissed off. Yeah. I can't remember who it was. It was somebody made him put it out. And he got all pissed off. He all turned red. You know, it was great.
But, I mean, you know, if Tiger's exempt till he's 60.
Yep.
If Tiger wants to play, he's going to play.
Yeah, exactly. You know, a couple of other things. This, like you said, Kev, my pick to win this tournament this week is going to be an upset pick that you'll laugh at. I'm picking Tyrrell Hatton to win this. And other guys I could see being really competitive are Cam Smith, Louis Oosthuizen, who's like off the board, but he always plays well in this type of tournament. You know, Cam Young, Fitzpatrick, guys like that, guys that can kind of – if the guys that I think their short games could be really good, and that's who I kind of pick in these type of tournaments. Just because of the Hamilton and the Leonard and the Ben Curtis and the guys that you don't ever bank on doing really well – usually play well in the open. If they get everything going and they're able to keep the ball straight and out of the pot bunkers, we have to take a ladder down into them, which take me a month just to throw it out of. And these guys get it out in one. It's amazing. But I love Tyrrell Hatton. The way I like his fiery attitude. I think, it would be a home victory, so to speak. So I'm gonna take him as my upset victor. I'll have more Rory in the mix. I'll have Shoffley in the mix. I'll have Bryson in the mix, even Koepka. But I think that Hatton's my guy. Kev, who do you like to win this one?
Well, if you really want to go upsets, you know, if you want some former champions, you've got, like, you know, Harmon to defend is a 66-1. Spieth is 66-1. Cam Smith, 50. Lowry, 40. You want to go even further back than that. Woods, 200. Ricky Fowler's 200. Todd Hamilton, John Daly, 2,000-1. If you want to go really off the board. I keep picking him. Damn it, he's going to win one of these. Tommy Fleetwood is actually pretty chalky here. You know, he's 22-1. He's probably in the top 10 on the odds boards there. He's going to win one of these. I'm going with Tommy Fleetwood.
The other guy I like in the top five, by the way, is Finau. I forgot to say Tony Finau. He's been consistently good. If he can continue to play at the level he's playing, I think he could be a top five, and I think he has a shot to win it as well. Sorry, Gino. I know you're next.
And top five, I'll go of the big ones who are among the favorites. Morikawa, to me, has, I think, the best chance of going low and finishing top five.
I'm going to take Shoffley out of the top five players in the odds. Being the guy up there. But I think Hatton and Finau and Cam Smith and Oosthuizen are going to be right up there. Gee.
I'm thinking this is John Rahm's time. I don't like the way he played a lot of these tournaments this year, and he didn't play well. He wasn't feeling well. I think this is the time where we see John Rahm come out and hit the ball well. You guys know how I like to do this. I like to do top 10 finishes and take two guys and throw them together. So I'm going Åberg and Rahm at plus 880. I like that. That's my favorite. That's the one I like. If I take Scheffler and Rahm, it's plus 434. That seems in the top 10. That seems to be a good bet. If I get Rahm to play well with Scheffler in the top 10, I kind of like that. The other one I'm kind of on right now is Xander Schauffele and Bryson DeChambeau at plus 552.
You know, it's Åberg, not Åberg.
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 Åberg. I like Åberg.
Got that little.
That's how it reads, Gino. You're not doing anything wrong. That's how it reads.
It's got that little faint over the A there, that circle over the A. Top,
but it's pronounced as the Swedes do, Åberg, apparently. I have no idea.
And one name I just want to throw out there who's way down on the list. He's plus 9,000 to win. What about Justin Thomas? This could be like a Justin Thomas. He avoids all those stupid bunkers. He plays the ball well, doesn't kill it. Plus 600 to finish in the top 10. I kind of like that one as a long shot.
He certainly has the skill set. Now we just got to put it together. Something happened between the years on him.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Any other Royal Troon?
We'll get much more into it next week as we recap it. It's hard to talk about it now. I just looking forward to some good golf. when I wake up at 5:20 in the morning, I can sit there and watch golf for a few minutes.
Watch golf for a little while. Yep. I'll be with my laptop in front of the TV all day.
I'll be jealous. All right. That's okay.
Let's move to a couple of NFL points. So Hard Knocks episode 3 with the New York Giants came out. It's the off-season, remember, version. Episode starts with Joe Shane talking to Mr. Mara. And it's free agent day, basically, on the episode. So they talk about what they're going to do, how they're going to do it. They have a whole board set up. And within the first 15 minutes, the whole board goes to crap because nothing is in line with what they thought. The dollar values are all out over the place. Interesting to see them reacting to what's going on. They wind up signing the first thing on their from the show is they wind up signing Runyon and Illuminor, the defensive lineman, offensive line, excuse me.
Correct.
Then the second thing that happens in the episode is Barkley winds up signing with Philly. So that throws them all over the place. Then they're trying to recoup from that. And then right after that, Xavier McKinney signs with Green Bay. So now they're really trying to figure out what they want to do. From that, they sign Devin Singletary. And then the Brian Burns trade happens. Right. Then we get to day two with them and Tyrod signs with the Jets. So they need to refocus what they're doing. And they wind up signing Drew Lock as the backup QB. Interesting the way they showed the behind the scenes. Again, I kind of wish they were doing this the way they do the regular Hard Knocks, which is a week later and not 3 months later, because it's actually pretty interesting how everything kind of functions. But to see this 3 months later, we know what's going to happen. We know who they're signing, what they're signing. It's not new news. So there's really nothing to really keep going through.
And the funny part about it, G, is that I think that everybody's going to complain the same way as you are, and they're going to find a way to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, that was the other thing. Two other points from the NFL this week. One, Brandon Ayuk, today, demanded a trade from the 49ers. I only mention it because the Commanders have been high on his board of teams he would like to go to. So I'm kind of hoping something happens. San Francisco has come out and said that they're not going to trade him, but I'd love to see a Commander uniform. That would probably be the next jersey I buy if he comes over. That's right on the list. And then the other item that came out this week, we heard a lot of Jet players talking about how Devontae Adams would be really good if he was a New York Jet. I want to ask the two Jet fans, what is your information on this? Talk to me. Thoughts, opinions?
Well, everything seems exciting now that the Knicks were able to get Bridges from the Nets. And you felt like there was no chance of that happening. Listen, of course, he'd be a great addition. And he's one of the top receivers in the NFL. And him with Garrett on the other side and the kid Corley coming up and you know, Xavier Gibson and all these other guys, it would be a really stacked receiver room. They have some cap space. I don't see it happening, though. I don't see the Raiders giving up on Adams just yet.
I'd love to see it, of course. I mean, who wouldn't? It gives them that, you know, now all of a sudden Mike Williams becomes your third receiver if he's healthy.
Yep.
And then, like you said, Corley, for everything you read, you know, we'll see how he looks in preseason here. But everything you read, you decide about him. And then with, like you say, the other young guys from last year, boy, that would be some receiving core. Probably would give the Jets, you know, between Rodgers and Breece Hall and the wide receivers, they'd have some of the best weapons in the league.
They certainly do. I don't think it's going to happen, though. I would put like maybe a 15 to 20% chance of it happening.
I'll tell you this. If it does, I don't think it's happening preseason. I think as you get towards a trade deadline, if something's going to happen, I think that's more along the lines of when it would happen. If the Raiders are not playing well and looking to get rid of some contract, the Jets are playing well, but here's the easy one. Mike Williams is not healthy.
Yep.
Ooh, big shock. You know, I think it could come up at that point. I think odds of him getting dealt preseason are very small at this point, so.
I agree. A couple of NFL potential holdouts that people are talking about. CeeDee Lamb, Tristan Wirfs, Brandon Ayuk, like you mentioned, G, Amari Cooper, Alvin Kamara, and Hassan Reddick of the Jets. And what happened with that Jefferson contract is it's reset all these wide receivers to want to make, you know, uber dollars. I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but that's why you see guys like Lamb and Cooper on this list. They've been performing at high levels, and they want to get paid. Kamara is probably the guy on this list with the least amount of leverage. He's a running back that's 29 years old and had his worst statistical season last year. So, you know, you have a hard time seeing that happening, especially with only 1 year left on his deal. The Jets, you know, you would wish they would be a little bit more prepared for what happened with, you know, when they made the trade for Reddick. The fact is that his stats are compare about the same as Daniel Hunter, who got 2 years, $49 million. So even though he's making about 16.5 this year, if he hits his bonus, Hunter's making about 24. So they're going to have to come up significantly in order to make Reddick happy. And that's pretty much all I have on the NFL. I don't know if you have anything else, Kev.
Nope.
All right. We will move over to Major League Baseball. So last night, the All-Star game, AL winds up winning 5-3. They've won 10 of the last 11 All-Star games. It was 3-3 after the third inning. Jared Duran hits a two-run homer in the fifth. Winds up being the winning run scored. NL had only 10 hits. The AL only had 5 hits. There were only 4 extra base hits in the whole game. The 2 home runs, one by Ohtani and the other one by Jared Duran. The other 2 extra base hits, it's a Harper double and a Soto double. That's it. You know, as far as RBIs, Ohtani had 3. Soto had 2 on his double. Fry had 1 on a single. And Jared Duran had the other 2. He winds up winning the MVP. Kind of a ho-hum kind of game. You know, a lot of pitching, a lot of – we saw, you know, Skeens out there. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, the most exciting part of the game was of the week. It was probably the – home run derby where Ingrid Andress sang the national anthem as bad as we've ever heard it,
yeah.
Only to find out that she was drunk and checked herself into rehab. I, you know, listen, Bobby Witt Jr., you know, great tournament hitting the home runs and stuff like that. It's fun for the fans and all that type of stuff. The game itself, I remember as a kid, the National League used to dominate the American League. And I grew up a Yankee fan. I watched the American League lose every freaking year. So, you know, it's turnabout. It all evens out in the end. Nice to see Paul Skeens come out and be that. That's what people want to see. They want to see Paul Skeens face Aaron Judge. And they want to see De La Cruz. And they want to see all these fun young guys. That's what baseball is all about. That's what the All-Star game, I should say, is all about. And you did get to see all that type of stuff. But like you said, G, there's not a lot of oomph or energy in the game. There wasn't a lot of action. The pitching seemed to control the hitting. And, you know, I was happy that Clay Holmes didn't get in to blow the game for the American League. Kev, any thoughts on the All-Star?
Yeah, you see, you know, all these pitchers come in, throw one inning.
Yep.
Yeah, at least when we grew up, you know, the starter would go 2 innings.
at times, 3.
Well, that's really pushing it going back.
But
yeah,
they used to do that, though. They used to do that. Because yeah. because the pitcher would bat ninth, and if they didn't get to him in the order, they waited until he got pinch hit for. So if he was on the if they were a road team, sometimes if they didn't get hits early, he might go a third inning. It was that crazy. They would wait for the because managers back then actually managed the game to have a bench just in case it went to extra innings. It was a ridiculously different sport than it is today.
Yeah. So last night, the National League kind of make sure they made all the pitching changes to make sure every Philadelphia Philly reliever got into the game.
And they did.
And that's what it felt like. And what happened to the 3 batter rule? Did that get waived for the All-Star game, I guess?
Yeah, I believe it. Yes.
I believe that was the case.
But the only thing is, you know, when you look at the American League, does this remind you of about 25 years ago when you're looking at potential the shortstops with Henderson and Seager and Witt? I'm not putting them there yet. But, when we were going back 25 years and you had A-Rod and Jeter and Nomar.
It's a pretty good comparison.
Yeah. I mean, the excitement of having all these young guys who are shortstops there in the American League, they got to take the 3 of them every year.
And pretty much.
Some other positions. But, you know, like you said, you know, sometimes towards the end of the game, you know, when, you know, Anthony Santander is getting the bat late in the game, it's like, okay, Big deal.
Fifth in the majors in homers.
I know. Anybody outside Baltimore and fantasy players know him?
Probably not.
Listen, it's a showcase for the fans, and that's the way it should be. It's a showcase for the fans.
Yep.
And that's it. You know what I mean? You get to see your players come.
Oh, I know.
The All-Star game, and no, but unfortunately, you know, everybody else wants to make so much of it, and that's basically all it is, you know?
Yep.
All right. So, baseball is at the All-Star break. Unbelievably, we kept talking. There were weeks that we brought up how many teams are over 500 or at 500 on a weekly basis. In the AL, there are 9 teams now 500 or better. And in the NL, there are now 9 teams 500 or better. At one point, there was only like 10 or 12. Amazing how it's turned a little bit, balanced itself out. Any comments, guys?
Well, two of the teams that were so hot, you know, the Yankees, of course, that were the first of 50 wins, and they've, as we know, have struggled big time in the last month. But you look at the Dodgers, who looked like they're going to run away from everybody in the National League. And since, you know, late May, they're playing 500 ball. I mean, look, so that lineup, the lineup, the top four guys scared the, you know, what out of you. But then it gets a little easier down at the bottom of the lineup. And the pitching staff, everybody's hurt or ineffective.
The young arms haven't done what they thought they were going to. And some of the guys they brought in got hurt.
Yeah.
That's really what happens.
I mean, if you told me, you know, that all of a sudden, you know, Arizona, San Diego would be 7 games back when it looked like the Dodgers were going to be up, you know, 15 at the All-Star break maybe.
Yeah, I thought it easy. 14, 15, because the Padres haven't played great. They're just trying to keep their head above water without Tatis. Machado finally starting to hit over there. And Arizona finally playing well for the first time all season for Arizona.
Yep. American League, and you look at, you know, Seattle had that 10-game lead, you know, early June, and all of a sudden Houston, you look up, they're 1 game back.
Yep.
You know, so you've got a lot of teams playing well, you know, and really, you know, with Chicago, White Sox, Oakland to a lesser extent. You know, I've got some real bad teams, but you know, I think that the top have come back to earth a little bit, and there's so much parity in the middle there that everybody's in contention. I have a feeling this is going to be a quiet trade deadline. There's just not enough teams who are going to be sellers. What do you guys think?
Well, listen, it's going to depend on what happens in the next month for teams like Pittsburgh, teams like San Diego, teams like the Mets. I mean, right now, if I had told you in May that the Mets would be in the playoffs, they're in the playoff right now.
Yeah.
They have the third wild card. I mean, but they have to sit there and have to hold it.
But the trade deadline's in 2 weeks.
I get it, but it's 2 weeks.
That's good.
You see what could happen in 2 weeks. All it takes is a 3-7 stretch. You fall the 9 games out if you're Pittsburgh instead of 6.5 of the division, and much further back in the wild card. You're 5 or 6 out in the wild card. Do you really want to stick around? That's really what it comes down to. It's not about. I know it's only 2 weeks, but you know, 14 games is a lot. You know, it can go pretty quickly.
I think there are enough teams on the bottom with payroll to shed that you are going to see deals. You got teams like Toronto and the White Sox. You got the Angels. You know, when you take some of these teams, the Marlins have players they're going to deal. You know,
well, Chisholm and Mason Miller are two of the big names that you're hearing about, right?
Yeah.
So the closer from Oakland and Jazz Chisholm.
And the Rockies. I mean, I think there are enough teams to payroll to shed. Yeah, that you're going to see deals made. I don't know if it's going to be that quiet. When you hear Toronto talking about that, you know, a lot of the guys on their roster, they want to cut payroll. You got a lot of players on that roster that could be dealt. I'm not sure it's going to be a quiet deadline, honestly.
But for them, you know, 2 good weeks, they get to within 4 or 5 of the wild card.
Yep. No.
They decide not to sell. Exactly. You know,
yeah, like I said, they're the one that is actually close to that grouping, Kev, but everybody else that I mentioned isn't. you know, the Miami. White Sox and the Angels, and, you know, there's plenty of payroll for those teams to shed if they want to shed it. And I think we're going to see some deals made.
But it just depends on the talent on those teams, too.
You know, you mentioned Oakland, you know, Miller. Great. What else do they have to trade? Is there a lot there to trade?
They have some outfielders that could be useful to some of these teams, especially when you have some of these teams that don't have huge salaries that may be in this, like Pittsburgh. You know, they could go out and pick up an outfielder, an infielder that they need, and still not cost them a lot of money, just a prospect or two, and, you know, it'll help them stay in the race here.
I mean, Rooker has 20 homers. He's got an OPS over 900. He's a guy that if they feel like they're not going to be competitive for another 3 years and they're not going to be able to keep him, that's a guy that they could deal with, and they could get some really legit prospects back for a guy like that, because they'll have 2 or 3 years of team control for when they deal him. No, that's – I mean, but you're right, Kev. Most of these teams, you know, Chicago, you got to have a couple of young arms, and you say to yourself, wow. You know, you look right now at the two strikeout leaders in Major League Baseball. Crochet's one, Cease's two. They already got rid of Cease. Then you get rid of Crochet. What are you telling you? What are you telling your fan base that, you know, we're going to start all over yet again? It's a lot for some of these fan bases to sell tickets. I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do. I'm just saying it's one of those things that they're facing.
Yeah.
And Kev, you made a point about the Dodgers before. So Milwaukee's used the most pitchers so far at 32. The Dodgers have used 31 different pitchers at this point already.
Wow.
Just shows you how many different pitchers they've had to use because of injuries. So go ahead, Kev. Sorry.
I was gonna say Atlanta could probably be in the mix for another starter as well.
Absolutely.
You know, because when you look, you know, they're two all stars. Chris Sale, he's got more innings already than he's had in the last 4 or 5 years.
Agreed.
Ronaldo Lopez starting. He spent the last 3 years in the bullpen. You know, what point, you know, Sale I have a little bit more confidence in. But, you know,
because he's done it in the past, but it's been a while.
It's been a while.
He never had a good full season really in Boston.
No, you have to go back to about 2018, 2019 to find the last time he really went, you know, 180 to 200 innings.
Another White Sox flamethrower that was dealt.
I mean, you know, can some of these guys survive through September and then into October? You know, I think you're going to see, you know, maybe the one thing you do is, you know, you do find these starters that, you know, You try to get, you know, that sixth starter. I mean, you gotta see, I think teams go to six man rotations more and more.
Yeah. Darren, any stats jump out at you with the All Star break here?
Well, I'm gonna get to stats, but first I want to talk about the Yankees just for a sec. So the Yankees, why I think that this team is good but can't be great. And just Sunday's game is a microcosm. Well, it's not even close. It's the microcosm of the whole game on Sunday. So they're down 3-2. They got a chance to get the sweep and go into the All-Star break tied. Ben Rice, the kid, hits a dramatic three-run homer in the top of the ninth off Kimbrel. Gives him the lead. Then you go to the bottom of the ninth with a two-run lead. Clay Holmes starts walking the ballpark, right? Then a routine ground to Volpe that he can't make a play on. A fly ball to Verdugo that he has a 98% chance of catching. He misses completely. Doesn't even come close. And they lose the game 6-5. If they're not going to make the small plays where Volpe's going to blow easy routine grounders, not hard hit, and Verdugo can't get a jump on a fly ball to the left, and Clay Holmes is Clay Holmes, he's an eighth inning pitcher. You know, he's not a money pitcher in a big spot. If we're in the playoffs, or the Yankees are in the playoffs, I should say, and yeah, they have a one-run lead in the ninth against Houston, And they bring in Clay Holmes. I don't think I'm winning. I have no confidence in it. And that's the microcosm of this team right now. They're not doing the little things that make them better and give them a chance. They should have gone into the All-Star break tie with Baltimore. And instead, they're two back. And that's horrible performance, but what they did on the bottom of the night. When you go to the Mets, on the other hand, they also lost their Sunday game. But they had won 5 in a row leading up to it. They had played well against Washington, played well against Colorado. Not good teams, but teams you have to beat, and they beat them. The Mets are going to need to get – they have to get at least two middle relievers on this road. And by middle, they need 7th and 8th inning guys. You're gonna bank on Diaz and say he's going to get the job done, and that's great. You know, you got one other arm in the bullpen that's showing you anything. Yeah, they're going to need – Well, who's the other arm? Yeah.
Nunez and also Buto's look good.
I'm not going to count on Buto.
That's who the Met fan right now is hanging his hat on.
I know, but are you really hanging your hat on Buto? No.
You're not hanging it on Buto. He's the third best reliever out there.
No, I'm not saying he's not the third best reliever, but you'd love him in the fifth inning when Quintana gives you 4 1/3. You don't need him. You don't need him here. So both of these teams need to get pitching. They both need to get relief pitching. The Yankees need a closer. The Mets need middle relief. They have the closer. Offensively, the Yankees are struggling like the Mets did early on. Both teams will rectify that, in my opinion. It's just they have to get the pitching going. But any points on that before I go into some stats? All right, I'm going to go into them. So just real quick. So the batting average leader right now, Kwan at 352, Yelich, Witt, Ohtani, and Arias are the top five. Judge's 34 home runs lead the way over Ohtani's 29, Henderson 28, Ozuna 26, and the aforementioned Santander 24. Judge has 85 ribbies. Ozuna and Ramirez each have 77. Bohm and Naylor each have 70. It's good stuff. And just because I love my friend Gino, De La Cruz, 46 stolen bases, Terang, 30, Caballero, 24, Hamilton, Ohtani, and Lane Thomas, 23. G?
And Elly De La Cruz, by the way, has 46 stolen bases. That is more than five teams in the majors. Atlanta, Detroit, Toronto, the Yankees, and San Francisco do not have 46 stolen bases in total.
Yeah, and he's been caught 8 times. He runs a lot. Yeah. Couple of OPS is Judge 1.1112, Ohtani 1.035, Soto 9.84, Harper 9.82, and Devers, who hasn't been talked about much at all, 9.77, has cracked the top five. Chris Sale with the 13 wins, like you mentioned before, leading the way. Lugo, Nola each have 11, along with Grayson Rodriguez, and we have 6 guys tied with 10. Strikeout leaders, Crochet 150, Cease 149, Tyler Glasnow, even injured, 143. Reagan's 141, or Raggins, however you pronounce it, and Sale at 140. Saves, you want to find another guy I don't trust? Helsley has 32. Class A is 29. Finnegan, who you don't trust, at 25. Kimbrel, who you certainly don't trust, at 23. Iglesias and Suarez at 22. Just to give you a couple of quick pitching lines, pitching and hitting lines of disappointing guys. Talked about him a little bit last week. Patrick Corbin is now 1-9 in 19 starts with a 5.57 ERA and a 3.05 batting average against with a whip of 1.54. Ryan Feltner, 1-9 with Colorado, 5.36, 2.82 batting average against, 1.45 whip. Dakota Hudson, 2-12, 5.84 ERA, 21 starts for Dakota, 2.85 batting average against, 1.64 whip. Andrew Haney, interesting, 3-10. ERA is 3.79. It's not that bad. Batting average against 2.47. Whip 1.25. Again, not awful. Mike Soroka, most interesting guy on this little list. He's 22 pitching experiences, 9 starts. He's 0-10. ERA of 5.23. Batting average against 2.37. Whip of 1.47. So these are the underachievers on the mound. Hitting-wise, just to mention a couple guys. So the worst guy that you'll find with OPS that plays every day, Orlando Arcia, who a couple of years ago was a sought-after guy in fantasy baseball. 2.11 batting average, 7 homers, 25 ribbies, on base of 244, OPS of 577. Next lowest, and I'm sorry to do this, Kev, I just have to go in order. Jeff McNeil.
McNeil, yeah.
16, 5-24, 276 on base. This guy won a batting title, 590 OPS. And Joey Meneses is third. 231, 3 homers, 42 ribbies, 291 on base, 593 OPS. But a couple of interesting batters just to touch on. Bo Bichette hitting 222 with 4 homers and 30 ribbies, on base of 275, OPS of 596. This is a first, second, third round draft pick in fantasy leagues. Dansby Swanson, who just got a huge contract a couple of years back, hitting 212 with 9 and 31. An on base of 282, an OPS of 632, and finally Corbin Carroll, who you touched on a couple of weeks ago, G, hitting 212 with 5 and 32. His on base is the only one on this list over 300 with 301 and a 635 OPS. So we have some guys that are really, really struggling in Major League Baseball. And these, I'm just going by guys that are getting a lot of starts and play every day. G? A
couple of team stats just to be throw them out there. The Houston Astros lead the league in batting at 262. The Dodgers lead the league in OPS at 768. San Diego Padres lead the league in hits with 876. Cincinnati Reds lead the league in stolen bases with 134, 46 of those to Ellie De La Cruz. And in home runs, Baltimore leads the league with 149. The Yankees have 140, only 9 behind them, mostly because of Mr. Judge. But then there's a gap of 11 home runs. The next team is at 129. Strikeouts, Darren, the Philadelphia Phillies, 877 strikeouts at this point in the year. ERA leader is Atlanta at 340. Seattle leads league in whip at 108. And the saves leader for the team at this point is St. Louis with 35. And Helsey has 32 of those 35. So just a couple of team stats I wanted to throw at you.
Gotcha. Anything else, Kev, on baseball?
Nope.
G? Nope, we're going to wrap it up. With the Sports Kings from Queens, Darren here with Kevin Gino, talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where a performer goes out drunk and sings the national anthem. A wacky world where we reward bad behavior in a soccer final by letting fans that don't have tickets come into the arena so we don't have to stall the game any further. That's the kind of stuff we do here. You know, please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be Spotify, Apple product, TuneIn, whatever you like. You know, we post on social, not as much the last couple of weeks. There's not a lot happening, but as more and more stuff happens, we'll be posting more and more. Please share it, like it, not only just like it, respond. Tell us what your thoughts are. Tell us what you want to know about. Tell us what you want us to talk about. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.